Welcome back once again to Arts Alive, the podcast of the St. Pete Catalyst. My name is Bill DeYoung. So happy to welcome Maestro Michael Francis here. He's the musical director and principal conductor of the Florida Orchestra, a position he has held now for 11 seasons.
That's true, Bill. Lovely to speak with you again.
I'm so happy. I was telling you a minute ago that this is almost exactly a year since the last time we did this. And like 2024, what we're going to do today is discuss the season, which begins this weekend.
Well, we've been going for a few weeks already, but the masterworks start this weekend.
And that's course, what I consider.
And of course, you know, I'm a typical conductor who says the season starts only when I arrive.
I took that into account when I said that. The first masterworks, I can say it like you. Yeah. The first show is Friday. It's tonight.
That's right. At the Morsani Hall, and that's going to be in the Strand Center. And it's the most epic program you can imagine. It's all about the power and majesty of nature. And it starts with Strauss's Alpine Symphony, the biggest piece of music written to date. It's an enormous score for well over 100 musicians.
Written to date by anyone or by Strauss?
By any composer, by him. And in 1915, he wrote it. So until that point, this is pretty much the largest piece ever written. I mean, it has 20 horns. I mean, it has wind machines, thunder machines. And it's basically dawn till dusk climbing up and down a mountain, replete with a magnificent view at the top, with the storms, waterfalls, everything, and also our emotional response to this. And it's in 22 short scenes, and we'll have the scenes up on the screen so you can follow along. And it is the most magnificent portrayal of what it's like to climb a mountain, both physically and metaphorically.
We don't have a lot of mountains in Florida.
So that's why you need to come.
Don't have a lot of experience
with that.
Yeah. Strauss wrote, what did you say, 1915?
Yeah.
Okay, so one of the things that is so impressive that I have read about this, and I can't remember the fellow's name who writes this stuff on your website, and he's absolutely brilliant. Kurt Loft.
Yes.
Hey, Kurt Loft. Hey, I've met Kurt before. That you have instruments in the audience.
That's right. There's a whole hunting party that you'll hear. They'll open a door, and you'll suddenly feel as if you're being chased as a hunting party goes by. I mean, this is Strauss. He was at his peak at this point. He had so much fame that he could say, I want to have 20 horns. And people would say, you can get it, no problem. So it's really a magnificent piece. And then in the second half, we have Ralph Vaughan Williams at the Lark Ascending, which is the most exquisite. Do you know, that piece is voted every single year in Great Britain the most beloved piece of classical music, with a high violin coming down the lark to greet us on earth and then take off again. And then we'll be finishing the program with The Pines of Rome, which is a piece maybe people don't know the title, by Respighi. Mm-hmm. But the final movement of that is so ridiculously amazing, because you will have brass behind us in the audience. And this is to do with the pines, which you find on the Appian Way. And it's the imagination of an ancient Roman army coming back to life. And it is absolutely astonishing sound. It is the definition of surround sound.
Can we go back to the Strauss for a second? Just because this is the one that... The Alps. So are we in Switzerland? Are we in Austria? Where are we?
We're technically in Garmisch. So we're looking down towards the Austrian Alps. So he's sort of not far from Munich, looking down that way.
Okay.
But this actually relates to an Alp that he climbed when he was 14. That's what we think. So it's the memory of his experience of the magnificent nature of climbing up to the top and being terrified on the way down.
22 pieces, did you say?
22 short little movements.
Right.
Yeah, it all comes up to around 45 minutes, the whole piece.
Uh-huh.
But it is one of those once-in-a-lifetime pieces. You cannot miss hearing the Alpine Symphony by Richard Strauss.
Tell me about the storm. That is part of it, isn't it?
There's a storm, and you'll hear a wind machine. Mm-hmm. You'll hear a thunder machine. You'll hear bass drums going aplenty. You'll hear eight horns that you see on the stage. You'll have everything. I mean, this is... It is absolutely thrilling. Of course, as you know, when you go to see a film, you'll see all the sound effects. But usually it's the orchestra that provides that emotional content, that emotional reaction. So you're going to watch this. This is almost like film music, but before films are really coming to the fore.
Well, music is at its best, as we know, very visual and creates images in your mind, is what you're saying. You have a guy, thunder sheet, what is that, a big sheet of aluminum or something?
And the wind machine is a sort of a canvas, and inside it there's a wooden board with slats, and you wind it up really fast, and
Are there union guys who play these things, Michael, or do you have to go out?
No, these are principal percussionists, and John Shore and his merry band.
Oh, yeah,
right. Percussionists. They will be there sweating.
You're on
away.
Wind machine, Nick.
Yeah, yeah. And it's exhausting to play because you really are. Wow. You're winding something up like a giant clock.
That's fantastic. Tell me how you program the other pieces to go with the Strauss.
So if you have Strauss, you have this magnificent portrayal of nature. Then mm-hmm. we want to achieve something similar, but also give a good contrast. So after you've heard Strauss, you need a break, and Vaughan Williams' The Lark Ascending gives you that moment of repose and peace. And what's nice then with the Respighi, written in 1924, is that this piece actually quotes the original nightingale that you hear. He recorded it, and we will be using that recording. So there's actually a live bird, which you'll hear on stage as well. So it's just a magnificent portrayal of what the trees are listening to or observing in life, and how we use those as a good barometer to observe other aspects of society.
Do you do this one seems very visual to me too, because we're talking about nature and just being out in the environment and stuff. Do you said you sort of have the movements up and the words. Are there images as well, or do we not use images?
Well, we do those inside the music series. So if you come to that, which of course happened on Thursday, but we do those about five times a year. And if you come to that, we will have the images, and that's a free event or a pay what you can event where I will talk through the piece with you to the audience to really help you go deeper into it. And then after the intermission, we'll perform it. And that gives you a sort of a good way to prepare for the weekend. We don't have the other two pieces, but those happen on a Thursday night at the Mahaffey. And for that, we'll have visuals, we'll have a lot more information. But because at the Florida Orchestra, we care hugely about making sure everybody can understand the music, whenever we can, we'll always put up the information on the screen behind us so that you can really let your imaginations, because you know, this is where he gets lost amongst the thickets. This is where he's on the waterfall. I can hear the cowbells. Literally, I need more cowbell. There's cowbells in this. I got to have more cowbell. You'll hear that. You'll hear goat herds and sheep herds and all sorts going on. It's an amazing piece of music.
So when you do these inside the music, you said you have several, five or six or something coming up during the season. That must be a lost leader for you. I mean, you don't make any money. You know, I mean, money's always hovering in the background of everything any artist does, and we have to bring it up. That is just a community service that you're doing.
Well, I think if we wanted to make money, we wouldn't go into the arts. I mean, an orchestra, by its very nature, relies upon donations. I mean, so, you know, we make maybe 30, 40% of our income from ticket sales. The rest is donations. So this is another way for us to give back to the community. Mm-hmm. And we also recognize there's some people who can't afford a ticket. Yeah. So they come to that. But above all, it's our way of educating, to help people go, I now understand the power and beauty of classical music as it affects my life. Maybe some people didn't have a chance for a classical music education as a child. Well, come along, and we will help you fall in love even deeper with this magnificent art form.
Do you find, I don't know if you go out and sort of talk to people, but the people say, yeah, I was here at Inside the Music, and I had to come and see the full concert now.
That's very, very common.
Yeah.
And that's what we encourage. Because, of course, it's not the final product. I mean, we'll still have a rehearsal on Friday morning. So it'll be much better on Friday night. So it gets better. And you get to hear in context of the other pieces.
Well, the others. Yeah. That's one thing I did want to ask you about. And I know I did, but I'm going to state it again, which is to find pieces that complement the main piece. It's like fitting a jigsaw puzzle together, I would imagine. If you have a great piece by Beethoven or something, you know, you find things. What do you look for? Similar dynamics or themes or, you know, words that sound nice together? I don't know. How do you do that?
There's many ways to link a piece. There's the subject of the piece. What's it about? If it's about revolution, then you might find something else. Sometimes you want to find a piece that contrasts, is the direct opposite of it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's to do with the nationality of the composer. Sometimes it's the time in which the piece is written. Other things we balance is that it's a little bit like being a chef preparing a tasting menu, that we want you to come along on the journey. And by the end of it, the piece of music that you're about to hear, the main one that you thought, I must come and hear that piece of music, the other ones complement it, help you to understand it even better. So those are sort of the qualities that we look for. Also orchestration, and if a piece is particularly loud and modern, then we'll give you something sweeter to go with it. And sometimes it's just to do with what we feel is important. For example, in November, we're performing Bernstein's Kaddish Symphony.
Next on my list.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And that piece is really to do with 80 years since the end of World War II, and particularly since the liberation of all those in the concentration
camps.
Yes,
of course.
So that's an incredibly powerful piece of music, and the text that we're doing is by Samuel Pizar. And Samuel Pizar passed away, but his wife and his daughter are coming to read his words about how he survived the concentration camps as a child. And it's a personal Kaddish, which is questioning God, why did you abandon us? And by the end of it, how he made peace with it. So, and this is set to Bernstein's music, and Bernstein asked for those words. So that's an example of finding an extremely powerful, relevant piece that we don't forget what happened, but we can understand it in a very personal and powerful way. And we paired that with Beethoven's Choral Fantasy. Mm-hmm. Well, that gives us a beautiful variety, a sense of optimism, so the whole concert doesn't feel too serious. And then we have some fantastic mystery pieces for you to hear as well.
Yeah, before we get to the mystery pieces, that's something that I didn't ask you last year, or probably not even the year before, but I'm going to today. When you do the Kaddish Symphony, the Holocaust Museum obviously is involved in this production. And the master chorale, are they just in the Beethoven choral?
Or? No, they're in the Kaddish. It's a huge, extremely difficult choral part. And also the Lumen children's choruses as well.
That's beautiful.
Will be involved. It's an enormous orchestra. It's very exciting. It's one of those pieces that is very moving, very powerful, but somehow also uplifting, and also has a solo soprano in there as well.
Oh, that's very nice. One of the things that you told me specifically to look out for, because you always do this when we discuss this season, was to look out for the Beethoven 9 coming up in March, which is a different arrangement.
So Gustav Mahler.
Mahler, yeah.
Yes, he called it a retouching, but actually it's basically a thickening of the orchestration so that Beethoven will sound as Beethoven intended, but with modern instruments. Mm. But for this version, you'll have, instead of four horns, eight horns. Mm. Instead of two flutes, four flutes. So the whole thing
isn't it rather like Beethoven's 18th then?
Yeah, it's
sorry, bad joke.
Beethoven's 99. I mean, it's huge. It's like you're looking at the face of Beethoven on the body of Arnold Schwarzenegger. Mm. I mean, it's just powerful.
You topped me right there.
Yeah, it's powerful, it's strong. And before that, we're going to have the final piece that Mahler wrote. So you have Mahler's 10th, the original movement, alongside Beethoven's 9th. So that's a real gemstone in our season. And that's if you haven't heard Beethoven 9 again, it's one of those pieces, you don't want to go through life and not hear that.
This is the 58th season, I believe, of the Flora Orchestra. And as we said, your 11th. How do you keep it interesting? I mean, is there an endless supply of music? I mean, don't you have to repeat yourself at some point?
Yeah, certainly certain pieces do come back. But I think, like, if anything, it's how much you love it and how much I love it. So I'm always delighted to come back to new pieces, or pieces that I know, I should say, familiar pieces, and then pair them in interesting ways. And, of course, then we have other major artists coming through as well. I mean, this season we've already had Cynthia Erivo. We've had Morgan Freeman. We'll have Audra McDonald coming up.
Yeah.
And then as well as fantastic films, Amadeus, we've had Jaws, and we have huge amounts of exciting concerts and a great variety. So that huge variety that we do is amazing, because the sheer volume of music that we perform, whether it be in the pop series for children, in our youth series, the parks, the rock, and just everything that we do alongside Masterworks, gives us all an enormous variety. And I'm someone who loves to learn new pieces all the time. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to just stick to my tried and tested 20 pieces.
Yeah.
I want my tried and tested 20,000 pieces. So that gives me a chance to keep bringing in new things. And also, the orchestra is so good. I've got to keep challenging these hungry musicians.
Here's a question. I was thinking about this. You conduct in other places as well, other than here. Does each orchestra have its own character?
Absolutely.
Explain that to me. It was just something that popped into my head.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you have a group, it's like a football team. Each team will have its own character. And of course, a lot of that is from the coach, but above all, most of it is from them. Hmm. Is that concatenation, that little grouping of talents, of physicality, of style, of history, of culture, where they're from. And they all have their different feeling, and then certain alpha musicians within the orchestra will have a certain influence. I mean, when I was in London, the LSO, London Symphony, was more famous for its brass, and the mm-hmm. Philharmonia was more famous for its strings. Then, of course, they all kind of blended, and they're all extremely good.
Yeah.
But here, the Florida Orchestra has a very different personality to many other orchestras. What I love about it is how hard they prepare, how hard they work in advance, and how hungry they are to do the best possible performance. There's a very healthy culture here, mm-hmm. and then there's a desire for excellence. And if a conductor comes along and doesn't challenge them to get better, they're not happy. Mm. Some orchestras don't want to be challenged. They want to have a nice, easy week. This orchestra's like, hey, come on, we can do better. We know we can. Help us get to the top. So conductors love coming here.
Yeah. Tell me about the pop shows. I always, and I'm clearing up another thing, that I always consider that you really put a lot of time, obviously time, thought, blood, sweat, tears, etc., into the masterworks. What about the pops?
It's the same amount.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we don't.
Because you don't conduct those.
No, I do. No. I do masterworks, opera, and sound waves typically. So,
yeah.
And I do obviously all the auditions and all the other things to do yeah. with that. But the pop series, it's a huge amount of work because we're often bringing in shows that may have been performed in another orchestra, packages. And to me, there isn't better music. There's just different varieties of music.
That is beautiful. And you add to the 20,000 is what you're talking about. Yes. I did want to ask, as I was telling you before we went on, that I was fortunate enough to see the presentation of Jaws with the film the other day. And it made me wonder about, you do a number of these through the year, and they sort of just seem to come as packages. Hey, we've got, you know, it's the Harry Potter touring orchestral show. Can your guys play it? Well, of course they can. What is this? I mean, it's a beautiful thing, and it's part of pop culture. It doesn't really further the mission of what Masterworks is. It's just sort of a nice event to do. I mean, how do you look at these things?
Well, first thing, I think the Florida Orchestra's job is to represent our community and to provide music for everybody.
Yeah.
So we don't just want everyone to come to Masterworks. We'd love you to, because we think that's where the greatest music is in terms of variety. Mm-hmm. But we want to meet your needs. So Jaws is powerful because when you watch Jaws, you are aware that it, without the soundtrack,
yeah,
it is just basically a tourist advert for Martha's Vineyard. There's pictures of a beach, and there's just, you see the water, but when you hear the music, you know something's underneath.
Yeah.
What was it like for you, I mean, hearing it?
I've seen Jaws, I'm 66 years old. I was in high school when it came out, so I've probably seen it 25, 30 times. And I'm one of those people who knows all the dialogue yeah. and everything. And my friend is sitting next to me who came with me. And right when the Universal logo came up, I said, the first thing you're going to hear is, you know, and the basses or the cellos, yeah. whoever it was doing this. Yeah. And I was off to the races.
Yeah.
It was wonderful. And it really did, as you were saying, kind of point out how important the music is to any kind of dramatic, exercise, if it's in your head or if it's on a screen or whatever it is. So I saw, and I deeply regret I didn't get to see The Good Peaches, because I think that that was probably another example of what the orchestra can do for another discipline, you know, another kind of
art. Yeah, we're hugely flexible. And I think, and also what I understand from audience experiences of watching the films with orchestra
yeah.
is you get to appreciate the emotional effect of the instruments upon you. And so often, like if you're watching Star Wars, if you didn't hear bah, bah, da, yeah. da, yum, that scene is not emotional. But when you know Luke Skywalker sensing the Force, then so often the music tells us the emotion above the words that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And like if you watch a horror movie with no music, it's not scary. It's a walk in the woods. But what's also fascinating is, and you must have found this, the audience, their responses are heightened because they're sharing it together. So things are funnier. They know the film, so the familiarity isn't a hindrance.
There's a lot of that at Jaws.
Exactly.
A lot of
people
that.
Know I got to get a bigger boat.
Yeah, and, yeah,
you
know, yeah, yeah.
All that stuff.
I loved your American accent.
You're welcome. It comes out once a year, just for you.
You mentioned the Sound Waves series, and that is still a going concern. Yeah, I saw the Church of the Ascension on there, and that's maybe third year for that, for the Clearwater Church.
Yeah, I think
somewhere
it's
in there.
Yeah, something like that. It started sort of as an offshoot out of COVID, where we're looking for
projects. Yeah, sure.
But then we just realized it gives the musicians and all of us a different ability to reach other parts of the community,
yeah.
smaller venues, and they become more theatrical. Last year we did The Soldier's Tale, and I narrated, I even played the devil. And I did all that sort of stuff in it. And
hey, weren't you in Pirates of the Caribbean? Yeah, exactly,
Jack Sparrow.
Yeah, that's right.
So we had a great time with that. And now we're doing another one with dancers. And so it's another very different creative outlet for us.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that people are really enjoying coming to watch these new smaller size venues and these smaller sized orchestra.
Well, even though we've had a couple of films and the whole Morgan Freeman beautiful song and dance, I heard it was really great, by the way. The 58th season sort of kind of technically starts tonight in Morsani Hall in the Strauss Center. 8 o'clock, it is Strauss's An Alpine Symphony. It's the first Masterworks concert of the Florida Orchestra's 58th season. It's also on at, what is it, 2 o'clock? Sunday at the Mahaffey, I think.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. No, Saturday at the Mahaffey this time. Is scheduling issues that happens sometimes?
Okay, occasionally it happens. It's very unusual for us, and we much prefer to be there on a Saturday night, but on this occasion it didn't work. Mm-hmm. But we have some fabulous things coming up this year as well.
That's why I was going to pass the baton over to you. And just be sure people know that we're starting this weekend, quote unquote. What else are you excited about? Let's put it that way.
Well, I think always a key point for us is our gala artist. And we're delighted that on February the 28th at the Strauss Center, we will have Audra McDonald coming to sing with us. And actually, tickets go on sale. Kelly will help me on October the 7th.
Thanks, Kelly.
14th. Yeah, thank you. So for subscribers on October the 7th and then general admission on October the 14th.
Yeah, that's and why that, I'm getting mine.
So she's going to be amazing, another world-class star coming to sing. So we've had fantastic gala artists through the years.
How was the Cynthia Erivo thing? There were two of them.
Her voice. I mean, all the musicians and all of us said, we don't know if we've ever heard a better voice.
Wow.
I mean, her intonation, her character, her personality, the way that she worked the audience, I mean, they were truly astonishing. And I would say that's the loudest I've ever heard an audience scream.
Wow.
I mean, the volume was off the charts. She is a true world star and a lovely person.
Did I hear she legally couldn't sing Defying Gravity?
Oh, she did, though.
She did.
She did.
Let's not tell anybody. Wow.
She did at the very end. She did a beautiful encore because the audience went so crazy of Imagine, and then she worked it in at the end.
That's brilliant.
I mean, Defying Gravity is a duet. So it's hard to do it on your own.
Oh, yeah.
That's the main reason.
Oh, you could have done the other part, you know.
Things people don't want to hear in life. singing.
Tell me what else you're jazzed about in this season.
I think I'm particularly excited about our Masterworks. I think that you mentioned Beethoven 9. Mm-hmm. We have some fantastic concerts featuring our own musicians, Beethoven Triple Concerto, with our own musicians, which should be wonderful. Finishing the season with Vaughan Williams' C Symphony and the Kaddish Symphony. This Bernstein concert is particularly important to me because of what it stands for.
Yeah.
And then I love conducting the Messiah. So Handel's Messiah at Christmas, that should be a firm family favorite for everybody. One of those things, I've got to see the Messiah this year. And of course, then just that massive variety that we do and we offer throughout. And we're really proud of the great work of Chelsea Gallo, our resident conductor.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, she's amazing at what she does leading all these series.
Chelsea's great, yes.
And I think in general, just making sure that we really are reaching and meeting the needs of this beautiful Tampa Bay community that I get to call home.
I would imagine that at the concerts this weekend, the 25-26 season guide, which says be part of something spectacular. Yes, indeed. I would imagine you can pick this up at the concerts this weekend, which gives you in beautiful full color everything that's happening this year. Michael Francis, thank you.
Always a pleasure, Bill. Thank you for your time.
Before I forget, let's direct everybody to floridaorchestra.org, which is where the tickets are and the info and the brilliant stuff that Kurt Loft writes. I want to give Kurt another shout out here. Again, Michael, thanks so much.
Great pleasure.